Hello and welcome to the Coffee and Podcast. I am your host, Philip Clayman. I'm one of the co-founders of Three Tree Coffee in Statesboro, Georgia. And on this podcast, we are on a quest to cultivate freedom for victims of human trafficking, all while drinking some really good coffee. Y'all, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, or if you've been following Three Tree for a while, you may have seen me before. I do a lot of videos. I'm the host of this podcast. My wife and I are the founders of Three Tree Coffee, but someone you may not know as well, who's been with us since the very beginning, is our good friend, Kimberly Daly, and her husband, Quinn. And so I'm super pumped that on today's episode, we're going to get to know Kimberly a little bit better and hear more about her journey when it comes to ending human trafficking and her journey to joining Three Tree. I want to mention that it was actually Kimberly and Quinn who actually first told my wife and I about ending human trafficking back in 2011, 2012 timeframe. And so they are very influential in our life and good friends. So super excited to have Kim on the show. Kim, thanks for joining today.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
So before we dive into your story, it is a coffee podcast. So of course, we've got our coffee right here. This is our new decaf Colombian sugarcane processed coffee. And there's a lot to unpack to that. But first, what do you think? Have you gotten to give it a sip yet?
I actually have not.
Oh, here we go. First sip coming right up.
Okay. So the first thing I noticed is there's some sweetness.
Okay.
Kind of like molasses-y sweetness. It's kind of dense.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. It's got some good sweetness. This is going to sound weird, but I feel like most decafs I have kind of taste like old socks.
Okay.
Or really stale bread.
That's
gross. It is gross. Most decafs I have are really gross. This is really good.
This is good. Yeah.
I don't know if I would know this is a decaf. And most decafs, like you can just taste it. Once you taste them over and over, you just know, oh, this is a decaffeinated coffee.
Yeah.
It's not as flavorful, but this is super good.
This is good.
Yeah.
I would drink it. I actually don't drink much caffeine past like 12, 1 o'clock or so. So I'm used to drinking decaf in the afternoons. In fact, I really love it. I love drinking a cup of decaf in the afternoon or evening. So yeah, this would definitely please the palate.
Yeah, awesome. Well, I'm super pleased as well. To give y'all some information at home, this is a new coffee we have at Three Tree. And the type of decaffeination process is called sugarcane process. And what happens there, you know, I'm going to give you my basic, my basic understanding. I'm not a scientist. But from my understanding, there's this derivative of sugarcane called ethyl acetate. And basically, that is used to decaffeinate the coffee. And what's important there is that it's all organic. It's not using unnatural chemicals. Mm-hmm. It's all natural natural compounds and things like that that's being used to decaffeinate the coffee. So I know that's really important to a lot of our customers. And that's a lot really important to us as well behind Three Tree. It's just knowing that our products are not using tons of chemicals or processed things. And this falls right into that category. And I'm pretty blown away. This is a brand new coffee. It's only my second time having it. And I'm really pleased with how it's tasting. So
yeah, I like it a lot.
Awesome. Well, let's dive into your story, Kim. Just start by telling us a little bit about yourself and your upbringing. Where are you from?
Okay. Well, I grew up in North Georgia, up near Athens, in a town called Watkinsville. Usually when you're from Watkinsville, you kind of say you're from Athens. Go Gators.
Oh, boo.
So I grew up in that area, but we did grow up as a Gator household. So that was interesting.
So you grew up as a Gator fan in the realm of Athens.
Yes, that's where my dad went to college, University of Florida. But he worked at UGA. So we always had kind of that rival thing going on.
Yeah, I bet. I bet he got a lot of flack in the office.
Oh, he did. His office was TP'd multiple times. But anyway, after high school, I moved out to Colorado. I joined a missions organization called Youth with a Mission, otherwise known as YWAM. I was a part of that organization for a few years. And with that organization, you go for like a period of time, you go to a school where you learn different topics, and then they send you off on a mission trip. So on those mission trips, you're overseas for 2 to 3 months. So you get a really good experience. You get a good like immersive experience into another culture where you get to practice the things that you've learned at the school on the field.
Yeah.
So I did that for a while. And then afterwards, I went to college for photography to an art school out in Denver that I'm pretty sure no longer exists. It like fell apart. I don't even think like any of the credits would even matter at this point from that school.
Just
like,
disappeared.
It just completely disappeared. So that's weird. But it was during that time that I met my husband out in Colorado. We got married in 2009. And then we had a few things that happened that brought us to Georgia.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's step back real quick. I want to hear a little bit more about the missions and the mm-hmm. cross-cultural experiences, because I just know from some of our past conversations that was really instrumental in your passion for Indian human trafficking. So where did you go on some of these trips mm-hmm. and what were some experiences you had that maybe opened up your eyes to, wow, human trafficking is a problem and we need to do something about it?
Yeah. So this was in 2004, 2005. So really before like a lot of the terms human trafficking started coming to the forefront of a lot of like media and stuff. And during the school phase that I talked about with YWAM, each week you actually have like a new social like injustice that's happening in the world that you learn about in the evenings, aside from what you're already learning about with the mission side of it. So one of the weeks was actually all about human trafficking, specifically sex trafficking. And the first trip that I made with YWAM was to Thailand. And while we were in Thailand, we really learned about the red light districts there. We actually got to. We walked the streets in Pattaya, Thailand, which is known as like the adult playground of Thailand. It's one of the world's largest red light districts. And during that time, we would actually go into the strip clubs and the bars and we would talk to the women. So when you're walking down some of the main streets there, it's strip club, nightclub, massage parlor, restaurant, and then on and on and on again. Like it's just for miles, it's just these types of businesses with, you know, women sitting outside waiting for the next person to come up. Women all over the place with signs, and you see men holding signs that literally have menus of like all the different women that are, you know, maybe in that specific strip club, the women that you can choose to have fun with that night. So that was like my first experience with this sex trafficking situation. I came back.
What was your initial reaction to that? I mean, was it just complete heartbreak? Was mm-hmm. it frustration? Was it overwhelm? I mean, what?
Yeah, I would say all of the above, but initially heartbreak. I really broke down for the women that were caught in these situations. And we learned while we were in Thailand that at least in Asian countries, it's not just women and children. It's also men that are being trafficked very regularly. And so it opened my eyes. It completely changed my worldview, honestly, of just these things happening. And,
you know, it's interesting. I think some people may think that, well, this is a choice of industry maybe for some people. And I imagine there's some cases where that's the case, where that's true. But we had Dottie Groover on not too long ago on a podcast. You should definitely check it out. She's mm-hmm. with Heart Dance if you've not listened to that episode. And that was incredibly eye-opening because I always thought there's mm-hmm. some aspects of this industry that's more human trafficking focused than choice of adult entertainment focused, if that makes sense. And from our conversation with her, it seems like it's quite drastically, if not completely, forced labor, right?
Right.
It's hardly a choice. Did you see that at all in some of your conversations? Did that even come up? Because I imagine some of these women would be very guarded in that situation. But mm-hmm. it seems like it was pretty obvious. I mean, you're seeing men basically sell women mm-hmm. as products.
Right.
Did it come up in other ways, conversations? Was it obvious that it was human trafficking?
So the initial trip that I made to Thailand, I wouldn't say it was as obvious when talking to the women. This trip, we were, you know, in the clubs, on the streets, trying to have conversations with the women with the little broken English that they had. I made a second trip to Thailand where we actually got to work with an organization that was rescuing women. And with those conversations, you could see it was much more like situations of forced coercion. A lot of the women had been promised a better life in the city. Maybe they were from the hills, the villages of Thailand, and they came to the city, you know, with this promise that they were going to have a better job. So that was the experience that I saw there.
Yeah. Have you been to other places besides Thailand and experienced any of this?
Yeah. So another trip that I got to make with YWAM was to Mauritania, Africa. And what was unique about this trip was that Mauritania, at least at the time that we went, was the only country that still had like the old type of slavery in existence. So the Arab population would actually enslave the African population. So in this case, we actually saw a totally different type of trafficking or enslavement. And while we were there too, we got to speak with some UN officials and actually talk with some government people about the problems in Africa. And you know, what you hear about people being put into shipping containers and shipped off, that was actually happening at the port in Mauritania. Spain is not too far away. And so the biggest industry in Mauritania was fishing. And so along with all the fish, they would pile people on the boats and in the shipping containers and ship them to Spain. And what was fascinating was after we left Mauritania, we went to Albania and did some work with some universities there. But we had a layover in France. And at the airport, there are actually ladies from Mauritania working at the airport in massage parlors. And that was just, that kind of like brought it all together for me. I was like, oh, I just met some people in Mauritania that, and we've heard these stories of, you know, them being sold or promised a better life somewhere. And then they get put in these places that I'm sure they don't want to be.
Wow. It's wild to see it in such two different settings. And then, you know, as you get into human trafficking, one of the first things you would learn is that there's two main types. There's plenty of forms of human trafficking and there's a lot of nuance to it. Mm-hmm. And I've been learning that a ton through this podcast and having guests on. But there's two primary forms of human trafficking that are the most prevalent. One would be sex trafficking, one would be labor trafficking. You got to see both in a pretty short span in very different international contexts. And as you said, it kind of shattered your worldview. So someone comes home from trips like this with a shattered worldview. What'd you do next? Did you just try to forget all of it? Maybe you've tried to forget all of it without even knowing? Or did you say, I'm going to do something about this? Like you come home. What's the response? What was your response after that?
Well, I think my first response was I wanted to tell as many people about what I witnessed, what I experienced. So I first started with my family, and I think all of their worldviews then were changed as well. Because, you know, my parents, their daughter had experienced like this life-changing thing, and they trusted me already. So they trusted what I was saying to them, and they trusted the photos that I had, the proof that I had. And I think that really opened their eyes to something else that was happening. And then, you know, to learn that it's not just happening in Asia and Africa, that it's happening in our own backyards. You know, I brought that to the table, to the conversation. And I think a lot of people were just kind of shut off to the idea that it was happening. And so honestly, over time, you just kind of, if you're not like really in an environment where you can have those conversations all the time, you just kind of start to forget about it. So actually thinking about having this conversation today, I was like, I kind of wanted to get back in that mindset and kind of re-feel and have those emotions, you know, that I felt for it before, because it really is heartbreaking. I mean, it, you can't walk away from something like that, an experience, and not want to bring other people along and and figure out what to do about it.
Yeah. And yet one of the reasons why I feel like it's difficult to remember, right? Time's a good number mm-hmm. of experiences. It's a good healer of experiences. It's also a good number of experiences. So you can start to just even think, was that even a thing? Did that happen? Was it, you know, it's like, at least in my experience, I know it's easy for time to numb it, especially when your surrounding community doesn't rally around it. Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned it to your family. If they seemed really receptive because they know you well. Mm-hmm. As you told more and more people, mm-hmm. was there a good reception or did that almost fuel the numbness of like, well, other people just don't seem to really be getting this. So I'm struggling to stay motivated, you know?
Yeah, I think that was mostly the situation. You know, being in the bubble of a youth, of a YWAM situation, this youth ministry, we're all experiencing similar things. And so you have like this safe space to talk about it and everyone understands. But then once you get out of that and people haven't experienced what you've experienced, most of the time they're pretty shut off because, I mean, everyone's busy. Everyone has things to do. And so I was really passionate about getting like a task force together. That was kind of like one of my main goals was getting this task force together. And we would have conversations surrounding trafficking and we would host nights where we would invite more people and just explain that this is happening and, you know, bring in a bigger community just to kind of discuss it. And everyone was just, is just so busy. It's hard to get people rallied around it until maybe they experience it themselves.
Yep. Well, and I have to share, and you're probably laughing on the inside about this because, you know, we'll get to this part of the story in a minute. But of course, that me and my wife met you and Quinn in Athens. And I remember you approached Anna and I and you were like, hey, human trafficking, it's a big problem. I'm mm-hmm. trying to put together a task force where we can get together and just pray, brainstorm solutions, things like that. And my exact answer to you was, I think we're too busy.
Yeah.
And I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, first of all, I had no kids and I was in college. So I had plenty of time. It wasn't that I was too busy, but I didn't have the same experience as you.
Right.
I'm not saying that's an excuse, but I'm just saying it's a challenge. I mean, mm-hmm. And then it took, you know, of course, my wife and I went to Indonesia a year later. We met a victim of human trafficking and saw the issues ourselves and said, whoa. Now we see it. Now mm-hmm. we understand what you were talking about. And so just what a challenge to try and bring others involved that haven't walked the same shoes or experience.
Right.
And so let's kind of get back to your story. So mm-hmm. you come back, mm-hmm. you meet this guy named Quinn.
I did.
Amazing guy. Mm-hmm. And then you move to Georgia.
Yep.
I know there's a lot to that story. Mm-hmm. What do you want to unpack about just how you met Quinn and y'all's journey taking you back to Georgia?
So after I had gotten back from Thailand for the second time, and when I went to Thailand the second time, I was convinced that that's where I was going to live for the rest of my life. I wanted to open a coffee shop, actually, and employ victims of human trafficking. We had seen it being done successfully in Thailand at that time. And so I wanted to take that model and replicate it. So, when I came back from that trip, I was like super gung-ho about doing that. And Quinn, he asked me out. I said no, because I was convinced I was going to Thailand. But he was persistent and I'm thankful that he was. And so it wasn't even a year after we started dating that we got married. So that was a really beautiful like time in my life. It just really like changed my heart toward marriage. I just wasn't interested in getting married at the time. So, about a year and a half after we got married, Quinn started having seizures one night, out of the blue. He had never had a seizure before. And so of course we go to the ER, and basically, long story short, he was in the hospital for 6 months in a coma for six weeks. They had to medically induce a coma to stop the seizures. He was having 40 and 50 a day. And for maybe a month or month and a half, they couldn't actually figure out what was happening with him. They were eventually able to diagnose with him with a really rare form of encephalitis. And basically, encephalitis is just where your brain swells. There are many types of encephalitis, but the type that Quinn got was an autoimmune type. And so there is no known like cause of that type of encephalitis other than it, your body just basically attacks your brain. So, that completely like shifted our world.
Another shattered worldview.
Another shattered worldview. Yes. So, Quinn literally is a miracle. But he did have to relearn how to walk and talk and, you know, hold a fork to eat. I mean, there are all of these things that he had to relearn how to do. And that took a very long time. There are a lot of really cool things that happened along the way that, you know, you can look back and see that God was protecting us and providing for us. In the midst of it, it was really, really hard. And luckily, Quinn had a fantastic job. He was working for Ball Aerospace. So that job has given him long-term disability because he was at that job for a certain amount of years. And it was literally to the month that he was able to receive a long-term disability package.
Wow.
So there are a lot of blessings from that period of time. One of the things that did happen when Quinn was working, he was working in Boulder, Colorado. We were living closer to Denver, and I was also working in Boulder. And so sometimes we would ride in together to work. And there was a specialty coffee shop across from where he worked. And Quinn was actually into specialty coffee before I was.
All right.
Which is pretty fun. And I was a Starbucks girl before this.
Oh no.
Yep.
Iced
Americano with peppermint and half and half, which is like very far from what I drink these days. But this coffee shop, so it was like the only specialty roaster that I was even aware of at the time. In Colorado, there were like tons of craft breweries opening up everywhere, but coffee was just not really a thing yet. This was 2008, 2009. And they had an espresso that tasted just like blueberries. It was from Ethiopia, Sadamo region. And I had it just a shot of espresso, and I was so timid and nervous to drink the shot of espresso because I just thought it was going to taste like sour and nasty. And but it just blew my mind. It tasted like blueberry syrup. So that's really fun that we got to experienced this specialty coffee world before Quinn got sick. And we kind of continued to explore that as we moved to Georgia. So it was in 2012 that we decided that we needed to move in with my parents up in Athens. And that's where we met you and Anna. You guys were working at one of the best specialty coffee shops in Athens. And so we continued to explore the specialty coffee world, and we learned a lot from y'all and a lot from Two Story. No longer exists anymore. Not the Two Story in Statesboro.
Yep, that's right. There's a new Two Story in town.
Yes.
Yep.
But that was just a really cool time of our life where we got to slow down a lot because Quinn was healing, and we got to form a friendship with you guys and learn about coffee and also learn about what, and it wasn't really learning, but I think we were all exploring like what would it look like to do like businesses missions. I remember that time where we would all have meetings about what would that look like. And a lot of it was centered around coffee. And Quinn and I were very open to exploring new avenues because we left something that seemed so secure and final, I guess, in Colorado. I mean, Quinn was planning on being at the job until he retired to now we're in Georgia and we're trying to figure out our next steps.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I imagine, you know, the second worldview shatter.
Yeah.
I mean, and you mentioned in hindsight, there's so many blessings, but in the moment it was tough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I imagine there was just a lot of bitterness in the midst of that, of why me? Why this?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, did you experience that? And I guess how long did it take to kind of sift through? Because that is a monumental life change.
Yes.
Know? 6 months in the hospital, multiple days coma, and something you did not share, but if I may share, that Quinn did not completely know who you were when you came out of the coma.
That's right.
So, I mean, everything in your life is having to be rebuilt. Mm-hmm. Everything in his life is having to be rebuilt. Mm-hmm. I mean, how long would you say it was that healing process? Do you feel like it's still happening? I mean, where?
Yeah.
What was that journey like?
Yeah, I would say in the midst of Quinn being in the hospital, it was honestly like fight or flight mode, survival mode every day for even, you know, even after he came home from the hospital, because, you know, when he came home from the hospital, I was like, oh yeah, it's finally over. He's home. We can start to heal and rebuild. And then he starts having seizures again. And I'm like, oh shoot, like this is going to continue to happen. It's going to be years, you know. At the time I didn't know if it would be lifelong or how long it would be for this healing process to take. So honestly, for quite a few years, I was in just plain old survival mode. I did not take a ton of time to process. And I, you know, we had great family support around us. We did not have a great church. We didn't have a church at the time. We had been kind of a funky mode with churches in Denver. And, you know, I think about that and the church family that I have now. If we were to have experienced what we experienced with the church family we have now, I think it would have been much different. And so I really value those good, deep relationships. But, and, you know, it really wasn't until 3 or 4 years later where I began to start to process and start to seek outside counsel, which was really important for a period of time. And I started to experience a lot of anxiety that I had never in my whole life experienced. You know, walking the streets of Thailand and looking at these brothels, like I didn't experience any sort of like nervousness or anything like that. Like I was such a free flowing type of person. And after Quinn got sick, I think that a lot of these, like these feelings, these emotions started kind of bubbling up and I didn't really know how to handle them. So I did seek help for that. I don't think I ever really experienced bitterness per se. I did ask a lot of questions, and a lot of, you know, I mean, I still kind of go through those emotions. They're highs and lows a lot.
Absolutely. Well, I know it's just been a huge journey for y'all, huge part of your journey.
Yes.
And Quinn's aware of a lot of this happening in these conversations. Mm-hmm. And so here I am working at a coffee shop in Athens, Georgia, 2012, mm-hmm. and in walks Kimberly and Quinn. And they order some drinks. Seems like they know what they're talking about with specialty coffee. They seem really cool. We're having fun. Next day they walk in. Quinn asks me what my name is again. I was like, well, my name is Philip. You know, and I'm sharing this a little bit in jest, but there was actually multiple days in a row where y'all came in and Quinn did not remember who I was. And I had the same conversation with him every day.
Yeah.
And I just remember being like, this is something's off. This seems a little strange. And then y'all opened up and shared about this story. But quickly built a great relationship with y'all. I mean, y'all are some mm-hmm. of our best friends. One of my favorite stories I just got to share real quick is y'all had an espresso machine at your house. That was this really old Krups machine.
Yep.
And I did not know much about coffee, but I knew how to steam some milk on a big commercial machine. And I remember y'all said, hey, come over and show us how to steam some milk on this machine at home. I said, no problem. Oh, and that machine was so difficult to use. We could not steam anything on that little puny machine. But we built a really great friendship and we mm-hmm. really enjoyed getting to know y'all. And even though we did not join the task force, we still learned a lot from y'all. And y'all were really where it started for my wife and I when it comes to Indian human trafficking. Y'all were the first to tell us about it. Mm. And so even though we didn't maybe respond in a way that I'm sure you wanted or respond in a way that I would want today in terms of saying, yes, let's do something about it, I still consider that the seed that was planted that then built upon itself and grew and grew and grew until we had that moment where we said, now we need to do something about it. And so I think that's a great lesson on persistence and not, you know, like who knows what other seeds you sowed in other mm-hmm. people that mm-hmm. you don't even talk with anymore.
Sure.
That maybe you just starting that conversation of, hey, human trafficking is a problem and we need to do something about it. Who knows what that is today? So now let's kind of jump back into your story. You're living in Athens. I know my wife and I moved down to Statesboro so that we could start Three Tree Coffee. And you called us one day.
Yep.
And you said, you're starting this coffee roaster called Three Tree. I'll let you take it from here. What were you thinking and what happened next that caused you to move from Athens to Statesboro? Because in Athens, you were living with your family. I mean, there was some security, there was some help, there was some time to really heal and process. And Quinn's memory was getting better and better.
Absolutely.
Which is awesome.
Yes, we saw a lot of healing.
Yep. So then why? You called us and said, hey, we want to move down to Statesboro and join Three Tree. Why? What prompted that?
So Quinn and I had already started talking about what our next steps were in life. We really wanted to be in coffee. We really wanted to be with, at least be with mission-minded people. And so we had actually started learning Serbian because we had this idea we wanted to move to Montenegro. I'd gone to Montenegro and visited this really wonderful couple who was doing ministry there. And we all started talking about what would it look like to open a coffee shop and use it as ministry in the city. And, you know, talking with Quinn's doctor, it was like, well, maybe like pump the brakes on that a little bit. So we kind of just rethought, okay, what else can we do? And moving 3 hours away to Statesboro from Athens seemed like a good move. It was actually closer to Quinn's doctor. His doctor's in Jacksonville now. And so there were some pros of living closer to him. And you guys were doing it. I mean, you started roasting coffee. You were working full-time at the bank still. And so, you know, I think at that point, Anna had just found out she was pregnant with Abigail. And so there were a lot of things that we saw that maybe we could bring and help with. And it just seemed like a really good stepping stone for us of getting involved in this wonderful, you know, very small business at the time. We never thought it would turn into a coffee shop at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, at that point it was just roasting coffee in a warehouse, like 5 pounds at a time, and selling it at the farmer's market on Saturdays. And so, yeah, it was honestly just like a leap of faith for us. Mm-hmm. Just thought, why not?
And did you kind of see it as like a short-term stepping stone? Because there's these big goals. We're going to Montenegro and, you know, things like that. Oh, but this seems more approachable. And I know y'all loved what was happening, but did y'all see this as a stepping stone or did you see it long-term or could you not even think that far ahead?
We weren't really thinking that far ahead. So, you know, something that we have learned through the process of Quinn being sick and a lot of our dreams, like kind of falling away, is this idea of just like taking one thing at a time and taking one day at a time. And also just like really living with our hands open and not trying to cling too tightly to our plans anymore. So, coming to Statesboro was really just, let's see where it goes. It was never like, we're only going to do it for a year and then move. We were in it for the long haul if that's what was going to be there for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so then you joined Three Tree.
Yep.
And like you said, we're just roasting 5 pounds at a time, selling at the farmer's market. It's very much a side gig, small roaster. Mm-hmm. Was it what you expected? Was it like, oh yeah, this is exactly what I was expecting? Or was it not what you were expecting?
I didn't know what to expect. First of all, I had never roasted coffee a day in my life. Mm-hmm. So I came, I think, to the roaster one day and you were like, okay, here it is. Mm-hmm. You kind of showed me how to do it. And then Anna was able to show me how to do it. And I kind of followed her around for a while. It was a blast. Mm-hmm. I mean, from the start, I was like, hey, this is a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Quinn and I still got to be together all the time, which we felt was really necessary still for like his period of time of healing and my comfortability with just, you know, where he was at in the healing process. Mm-hmm. And so, it was working out really well. Mm-hmm. It was a blast.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, so y'all were original founding members of Three Tree. I mean, my wife and I had started roasting prior to y'all joining, mm-hmm. but it really was hardly a business. I mean, it was really just kind of a fun thing on the side. And so y'all been with us pretty much since day one back in 2014, which you know how grateful we are for that and just the relationship that we all have. And just to kind of spread, just share your accolades. You've worn almost every hat at Three Tree that there can possibly be worn. You started out as a roaster. I'll never forget in 2015 when you called Anna and I and you said, I know we're not going to open a coffee shop, but I found a coffee shop.
Yes.
There was no plan to ever open shops. It was just going to be a roaster, just this side thing. And you called us and you said, this is it. Like, I know this is it. We need to open a coffee shop. It needs to be here. And you don't talk like that very much. I was like, what? We're not opening a coffee shop. What are we doing? Why would we do that? And that's our first shops. If you've ever been to our Midtown location on South Main Street, Kim was the first one that saw it and said, we need to open up a coffee shop here. Mm-hmm. We opened this shop. You were a barista for a little bit. You then led the kitchen team and helped build a lot of our gluten-free, dairy-free products that we have, our gluten-free muffins that people rave about all the time. Mm-hmm. You helped build that recipe. Mm-hmm. You then continued to move. You moved back into the roasting side to do a lot of our roasting when we were a bigger operation. Mm-hmm. You've done marketing. You've done admin. You've done social media. You have pretty much done almost everything there can be done in Three Tree. And I just want people to know that. I mean, once again, I think people see a couple faces here and there. They don't get to know much about you. And you've had a crucial role to play in this whole journey, which I just think is awesome. And Quinn's been there all along, just like supporting you, supporting Three Tree. Mm-hmm. He's legit one of our chief coffee tasters. He has a really good palate and he gives us good feedback on how the coffee tastes. Mm-hmm. And so your involvement has literally built this company. And I'm incredibly thankful. And I just want to make sure people know that y'all have been such an integral part of that. And that was a quick recap of pretty much 2014 to now. Yeah. But I now want to step back because, of course, life is not Three Tree. My life is not Three Tree. Your life is not Three Tree. It's a mm-hmm. big part of what we mm-hmm. do. I think we believe a lot in it, obviously. But we're there's more than that. And so you've gotten involved in the foster care system a lot in your time in Statesboro. So mm-hmm. I'd love to unpack that a little bit. What first kind of prompted your interest in the foster care system? Because so far none of the past is connecting the dots to that. Maybe you could kind of see it, but I want you to explain it. Why this interest in fostering adoption once you got to Statesboro?
Well, when I was in high school, I got the opportunity to go to Russia a couple of times and work in a couple of orphanages. And from then on, I really wanted to adopt a kid from Russia. That was like my goal. I think that opportunity is like closed. I don't think Russia even allows outside adoptions at this point. But when Quinn and I got married, that was always a part of our conversation was adoption. That's how we wanted to grow our family potentially. I was adopted as an infant, so it's always been like near and dear to my heart. And you know, when Quinn got sick, obviously like life took a big shift. And that was a difficult thing for us to really go after for a period of time. So it really wasn't until we were settled here in Statesboro that we felt like, you know, now's the time that we can pursue it. We actually, you know, pursued a couple of different avenues, but landed with an organization here in Bullitt County called Families for Families. And they've been fantastic to work with. Highly recommend them. But there was one time we were listening to a podcast. It was by Exodus Cry. And they were interviewing a girl. And at the very end, they posed the question, like, if people are wanting to get involved into human trafficking, what is one thing that you can recommend? And her answer was get involved in foster care. Because here in the US, there's unfortunately such a correlation between the foster care system and kids that end up in trafficking situations. And so Quinn and I were like, okay, that's what we can do. So we got our home approved and fostered for a while. Right now, our home is open for respite care. We saw that there was a big need with foster families just to have a bit more support. So even when we were a foster family, we were fostering a teen. And so there wasn't a whole lot of like, there weren't a lot of people out there that really wanted to like jump in and say, I'll watch her for a while or I'll help with that. There aren't that many like resources for fostering teens in general. So there was this need for respite families where you can basically just provide assistance. You can provide like babysitting overnight things for foster families. And so that was kind of where we stepped into, and it's been wonderful. We get to meet a lot of kids who all like call us aunt and uncle, and get to meet a lot of different families and serve them in a way that, you know, we wouldn't have gotten to before without our home being approved as a foster care home.
Yeah. As you've gotten into the fostering system here, has it opened your eyes to anything about fostering or adoption that is worth sharing with others? Like, you haven't walked that path. Is there any lessons learned or things that you've seen that you're like, I didn't realize it was fostering, or I thought I knew this, but it really was verified as I really started walking that path?
Yeah. You know, you hear a lot that fostering is really tough. And I'm here to say it's true. So there are a lot of benefits. Getting to know the kids and pouring into their lives is wonderful. But it honestly can be very grueling. There are so many appointments that you have to go to, so many court dates that you have to go to. You have caseworkers in and out of your home all the time. And it can be pretty exhausting. So with the things that Quinn and I deal with, just with his his sickness still healing from memory issues and stuff like that, we that's why we took a step back and did respite care, because you actually don't have all those people coming in and out of your home every week or every month. You're not the ones going to the court dates and stuff, but we can come alongside those families who are having to do that and say, well, we can watch our kids while you have to go to court, or we can bring you a meal this week because I know it's a really tough week with all the appointments that you have. So the myth of it being really hard is true.
So buckle up and build a community that can help you.
Absolutely. That's super important.
Yeah, absolutely. To put a bow tie on this, and I mean, we've only been talking for 40 minutes. I mean, there's so much to unpack here. You mentioned being adopted yourself. You mentioned Quinn's situation. You mentioned your times overseas. Mm-hmm. You mentioned your time as fostering and your time with 3Tree. If you could put like a word or a phrase to just your story, you and Quinn's story, I don't know, what would it be? What comes to mind that you feel like encapsulates the journey that y'all have been on?
That's a tough one. I think the first thing that comes to mind, I kind of already mentioned, is just live with open hands. Because truly, you just never know what tomorrow brings, what the next hour brings. And holding on to your life too tightly, or your goals or your dreams, or you know, what you've set in motion too tightly, you can miss out on a lot. You know, we've experienced so many blessings, and so many really cool life adventures, because we've just been open.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. Well, really appreciate you just sharing more of your story. And if there's one thing I just want to just extract to challenge our listeners at home is, once again, just this notion of you never know what small conversations and what kind of effect they can have. Mm-hmm. You never know what sort of, introductions can become, right? Customers coming into a coffee shop that I just happened to work at the time, and now business partners and good family friends. And y'all were some of the first to tell us about human trafficking. Mm-hmm. And even though it didn't result in immediate fruit, it definitely planted a seed that literally created 3Tree.
Yeah. I mean, what full circle has happened where, you know, I wanted to be in Thailand opening a coffee shop to rescue women out of trafficking. And here I am helping to run a coffee shop that's not like physically rescuing women, but we're doing so much for ending human trafficking. Mm-hmm. And I'm so proud of it.
Yep, absolutely. Well, awesome. Well, I really appreciate you just sharing a lot of your story. I was super excited to have you on the show and just for people to get to know you and Quinn better. Mm-hmm. So just thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you so much for being a part of 3Tree.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Yep. Honestly, it's a blast.
Awesome.
I'm really thankful for it.
Sweet. Well, that is it for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed just getting to know someone else who's a part of 3Tree and who's been there since the beginning, getting to know Kim better. I hope you learned something from her story. I hope you're encouraged by her story. It is a story of shattered worldviews, of challenge, of difficulty, of persistence, and of open hands. And I just think that's a really powerful testimony for all of us to learn from and to be encouraged by. So I hope you were encouraged by it. Stay tuned to future episodes as we continue to share more about what we're doing to end human trafficking and more coffee products coming out. Stay tuned. If you want to be following us online and through our socials, you can check us out on Instagram, Facebook, Three Tree Coffee Roasters. And otherwise, we appreciate you listening.